If you only had one opportunity to share a message with someone, what would you say? That's the idea behind our new series, Dear Church. The Northgate pastors are each going to share what they would say if they only had one chance to say it. And now, here's today's message.
Good morning, Northgate. I'm Sean. I'm the youth director here. John, thanks for the wonderful introduction. So that camp video, that's the third time I've seen it because we were living it last week. I got some of the campers and counselors here as well. It's just fun to get a glimpse of what Summer's Best 2 Weeks is. And as you'll get to hear a little bit, Summer's Best 2 Weeks has been a big part of my life and impacted me and helped me get to where I am here doing youth ministry full time here at Northgate with your kids. So you may not know if you hadn't heard of Summer's Best 2 Weeks, but we have a tradition at Summer's Best 2 Weeks that the Sunday in between the 2 weeks of camp, we do Camp Sunday. And as you can see, Tara was wearing her Corinthians shirt. The Corinthians are the referees at camp. And then you'll see some red and some blue shirts in camp, the red Romans and the blue Galatians. And those are kind of representing what we're doing. And, you know, there's a connection there between what I want to share with you today and that. And I love this Dear Church series because it's a wonder. I get to be on staff and get to hang out with all the other pastors and Pastor Patty and Pastor Greg and, you know, everybody just who's gotten to share. And I wish more of the pastors would come up and share because they're just wonderful people. My buddy Mark. And so the cool thing is you get to hear from them and hear what they're passionate about, you know, and you get to see a bit of their personality, which is really cool. And I could see that on a daily basis. But like I said, my message that I want to share with you today is kind of similar. You know, dear church, what's the one sermon that I would preach for the rest of my life? And it has a lot to do with Summer's Best 2 Weeks, something I picked up from there, and also why I'm doing youth ministry now and kind of how I entered into that in the first place. The founder of Summer's Best 2 Weeks, his name is Jim Welch, and I'm really excited to get to call him a personal friend. And I know he's a personal friend because he came to visit me a couple months ago. Because we're doing Summer's Best 2 Weeks in the day camp, he came to drop off, you know, all the awards. And the kids at camp, they can do different activities and earn different levels of achievement. And they get maybe a varsity letter at the end of the camp term, you know, kind of commemorating that. For those who have achieved that level. And so Jim came to drop all that stuff off. He drove all the way from Somerset, Pennsylvania, where the camps are located, came out and see me, and Jim slept on my couch. Jim is about 70 years old now, and he's a tall guy. He's like towering over me. But it was cool to have Jim come and stay on my couch. I didn't know if it was okay for him to stay on the couch or if he's going to be good with that, but he was, and it was a lot of fun. And actually, Jim had spent a lot of time investing in doing ministry. One of the first churches he pastored at was in Syracuse. So he spent a lot of time up in the Rochester, Syracuse, Western New York area. And I kind of assumed that when Jim came to visit me, that he had been to Dinosaur Barbecue before because, you know, it started in Syracuse and all that. And Jim had never been to Dinosaur Barbecue. So when he's like, Sean, we're going to dinner on Thursday night, come to visit, here's your stuff. We get to hang out. So I took him to Dinosaur Barbecue. Now, there's one thing I didn't anticipate because I love Dinosaur. It's great. Justin, very jealous. Justin Michaud, who does all the videos and graphics stuff, loves Dinosaur Barbecue. But when we went there on that day, I didn't know that Thursday night at the Dinosaur in Rochester is like motorcycle night. So everybody's all there. Like, I knew it's a part of Dinosaur. You always see a bike or two, but not 40. Okay, so there's a lot of leather going on, and, you know, so I was a little protective of Jim Welch because he's such a precious commodity. I mean, he's a big guy. Like, he could probably take care of himself, but I just felt like I needed to protect him. And as we get there, you know, Jim's also got a throat condition, so it's hard for him to speak, and his voice sounds much more raspy than mine right now after a week at camp. It's more like where I was yesterday. I sounded like the Godfather. Okay? So it was kind of cool. I have a sermon from the Godfather, I thought. But anyway, Jim kind of struggles with it. So with all the exhaust, like, we're standing there and we had to wait outside because it's so packed full of motorcycle folks who are super nice. Like, they're like, hey, how's it going? We were chatting with them. And, you know, Jim just, you know, we're standing right behind a motorcycle and they're starting it up, and I'm a little concerned that the exhaust fumes are going to finish off 70-year-old Jim. You know, I've known him for 15 years, not as quick as he once was. And, you know, he was just fine. And Jim turns and said to me, he's like, I love that smell. The exhaust just coming in there. I was like, I knew that my worries about Jim were, you know, not needed. You know, he can handle himself more than I can. So, but then the friendship with Jim kind of started how he knows me from the many of thousands of college students that had worked at Summer's Best 2 weeks at the camps in Pennsylvania or at the day camps at churches like this one was because we would basically have the camp term for 2 weeks down in PA. Kids would stay overnight. They'd come on a Sunday. They'd leave on a Friday. And then the Saturday in between, that was our day off to kind of refresh and eat junk food and go to movies and sit inside air conditioning as counselors. But it would start with a breakfast. So we'd all meet and we'd do the big breakfast. And I was a broke college student, so of course I was at the breakfast. And the whole 2 weeks I was like, you know, edging out my campers to try and get the food because there's only so much you can get and you only have 20 minutes to eat, which is great for a kid. But for a counselor who's been running around with these kids the whole time, you need some food. Don't worry if you sent your kids to Summer's Best 2 weeks at the day camp. We're not fighting your kids for food here at this camp. That's just the overnight camp. Connor's laughing at me. I'll fight you for food next week. So at one of those breakfasts with Jim, you know, all the counselors would kind of go off and do their own thing. And I remember one Saturday in particular, Jim would go on long walks and he'd lecture you. He'd take a lot of deep breaths, I think partly because of his vocal condition from the injury he had, but I think also he liked to make you wait for it. It was his way of saying what I'm about to tell you is pretty important. And on one of those walks, I also liked hanging out with Jim because it wasn't too far along that I lost both my grandmothers, you know, and they were the last grandparents I had. So hanging out with Jim was great because he's this awesome mentor and this guy who I was a part of the ministry that he created 50 years before, you know, but also, it was kind of like hanging out with my grandparents, so I just loved it. I kind of leaned into that time, and one day, I usually soaked in what Jim was saying, and Jim said, you know, Sean, 80% of living a Christian life is this, and I'm ready. Like, I'm ready to take notes. I'm ready to write it down, memorize it. I didn't even have a pen. I was, like, looking for a pen. I had shorts on. What am I thinking? But I'm ready to hear what Jim has to say so I can live it out and apply. You know, and there's me as a junior in college walking along with the founder of Summer's Best 2 weeks and hearing what he has to say. And he said, Sean, 80% of living out this Christian life, that's what I wanted, was the camp motto, the M third motto, God first, others second, and ourselves third. You know, I think there was a part of me that was kind of hoping to hear something I'd never heard of before, be like something to blow my mind and all that. But I tell you what, he told us the motto, and I had known it for a bunch of years at that point, you know, and we'd recited it to kids, and we'd done Bible verses, and, you know, we led things, and we talked about it when we're in competition, who gets the glory, Jesus, and that was a way that we lived out the I'm third motto. But you know what? I've been unpacking that for the last 12 years. It's been a big part of my life, that I'm third motto, God first, others second, ourselves third. So I want to take a look at one of the scriptures that kind of comes from. But before we look at the scripture, I want to give you some of the backstory for the context of where that comes from, because I think it helps to enhance to know what Jesus is going through as he has this interaction in Matthew 22. So there's two groups of people that are present. There's the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And this isn't biblical, but this is how I think of it. And sometimes it's helpful, maybe. You know, the Sadducees and the Pharisees are two religious political parties that have a lot of influence in the Jewish culture in the area where Jesus is at. And, you know, we've got in America the Democrats and the Republicans, and very similarly in some ways, they've got a lot of influence, they've got their agendas and what they'd like to see happen. You know, regardless of where you fall, you know, they're kind of, these groups did not necessarily get along. They disagreed on a lot of things, religious things, and they were very passionate about them. But the one thing they did agree on is they didn't like this guy, Jesus, because Jesus was walking around, and he was talking about being the Son of God and about being like God and about knowing about things as if he'd experienced them for the first time. People did not like that. You know, people liked it, but the Pharisees and the Sadducees did not, you know, because it challenged their seat of power that they had, you know, their wealth and their notoriety and their position within their society, because they couldn't describe or explain the things that Jesus said or did. And they had never heard anything as true as what he had said. So, you know, they were ready to like take him down. So that's the setting of kind of what we're walking into, you know. And what happened to the Pharisees, they're in a big group setting, not so dissimilar from us, but probably open air is what I picture in my brain. You know, and the Pharisees go first, and they're like waiting to take this guy Jesus down in front of all of his followers so that they just go away, because historically there had been other people that had made claims or had groups of people follow him, and they crushed him. And they were waiting to crush this Jesus guy and embarrass him and give him questions he couldn't answer, because they were supposed to, they really thought they were smarter than Jesus. That's a mistake, let me tell you. So, you know, first the Pharisees started, and then they asked him this question about, you know, should we pay taxes or not, or should we glorify God? And it was choose A or B. And they were kind of tricking him to say, like, either disrespect the government, the Roman government of the time, or disrespect God. And so Jesus blew them all out of the water, and he responded with this phrase that many of you probably know. He said, give to Caesar what's due to Caesar, but give to God what's due to God in the way that you live. And they were speechless. They had nothing to say. They thought they had him stumped, you know, and the Pharisees had fallen on their face with their attempt. They had nothing to say. And then the Sadducees, they're like, oh yeah, Pharisees, they fell on their face. We're going to be the heroes. We're going to be the ones that get this Jesus guy. We're going to stump him, and, you know, we're going to go back to the station of authority that we want to have. And so the Sadducees came up with this really complex question that part of me is thinking they didn't even have the answer to, you know, that they asked the question, here's how it went. They said, okay, if a man has a wife, okay, and then the man dies and passes away, but he's got six other younger brothers, in their tradition, the wife would be passed on, it's really weird, but wife would be passed on to the next eldest brother. And what if that happens so on and so forth for all the brothers, so that this wife has been, you know, a wife of all these seven brothers? They said, Jesus, when you get to heaven, whose wife is she going to be then? You know? And Jesus kind of responds in a way very much like the first time, displaying his knowledge of God. He said, if you had any idea of what heaven was really like, you would never ask me that question, because there's no marriage in heaven and there's all this, and you're going to be experiencing God in such a different way that you'd never even think of. And he's like, you're thinking about this, and heaven is this. He didn't really even answer the question, because the question didn't deserve being answered. He said, heaven is like this. And they, you know, the word that I use, they were just floored. But the word that my Bible uses, it said that they were just astonished. They had never heard heaven talked of in the same way. But that's because they had only heard it talked about by somebody who was just a man, not fully man, fully God. You know, so here's where we pick up. The Pharisees fell on their face. The Sadducees fell on their face. Then we can go to the scripture slide. Now, the Pharisees are going to take another chance at taking down this Jesus guy. Here we go, Matthew 22, verse 34. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. Now, I'm a youth director, so when I see the phrase get together, and I think my brain goes to the middle school boys at base. If all the middle school boys are off in the corner, there's no leader over there, something is about to happen. It's going to be devious. It's a couple middle school boys in the crowd, and they're smiling at me right now. Okay, something's going to happen. You got to watch out when they all get together and they don't have any instruction, because all the food's about to disappear, or somebody, some leader's about to be tackled and tied down or something like that. But something's about to happen, right? That's what the boys do. Ava's shaking her head. Okay, so the Pharisees are getting together and they're plotting something. They're like, Sadducees failed. Okay, we're going to send the best of our best. And my pages flip. Okay, so one of them, an expert in the law, tested Jesus with this question. Okay, so I'm going to call this suspenders guy, because he's the best of the best. Suspenders weren't invented then, but if they had suspenders, this guy's up there. He's like, Jesus, I'm the representative of the Pharisees. I have a question for you. And then he kind of almost sarcastically uses the respectful title of teacher. He said, because they're trying to take him down. It says, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Now, he was trying to trick him. He was trying to get Jesus to say this one thing is important and all the other commands, because the Pharisees were all about the rules and all the things that they had to do that they felt came from Scripture. And a lot of them did for the most part, but they had been so legalistic that they couldn't even really see or understand God. So from their perspective, they're like, Jesus is going to say that this is the most important thing and that all these things don't really matter. And then Jesus blew him away, just like he did the other two times. Jesus replied, and here we go, verse 37, said, Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. And then catch this last part. He said, all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Now, when Jim Welch first told me 80% of living a Christian life was just doing the I'm third motto, God first, other second, myself third. And I'm like, really, Jim, 80%? Like, there's a lot in the Bible. But as we read this, you know, there's a little note in my study Bible that says, all the law and the prophets, that phrase was saying all of Scripture, all that God taught us, those are the things, they all of that hangs on the two commandments. You know, kind of like a picture frame. They're right there. So after taking that in consideration, maybe it's a higher percentage than 80%. We do this thing at Summer's Best 2 Weeks sometimes. I don't know if you've asked this question this week. Some of our counselors are in the audience. But we say, hey, kids, try and come up with something that God told us to do that doesn't fall into God first, other second, or yourself third. And, you know, a couple of them may think for a little while. They're probably thinking right now. They're like, ooh, I got one. And then they bring it up, and then we unpack it a little bit. And it's very hard-pressed to find something or anything, I still haven't, that doesn't have to do with putting God first or others second, you know? So it makes me think that 80% that Jim said is actually a lot higher than that. You know, last week when Vern was preaching his Dear Church sermon, he said something that really got me thinking, and it kind of was going along with what I was thinking I might share with you today. And he said this phrase, among a lot of other really good things, but this one in particular, I was mulling over as I was preparing for Summer's Best 2 Weeks, the first week of camp we just had, and also to speak with you today. He said, we're all a mess, but God cleaned us up for a purpose. And that really stuck with me, maybe just for some of the things that I'm going through right now. But I've been thinking about it all week, how it pertains to the I'm third motto, how it pertains to the week of camp and how I'm living out my life. And, you know, as I was thinking how I wanted to share, I was reminded of another scripture, which isn't going to be up here because I've got it memorized. So I'm going to share it with you. Made me think of Romans. And I love scriptures that come from the book of Romans and Galatians, because at camp, we've got the blue Galatians, the red Romans, you know. And so innately, I love those, but this is one of my favorites. Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. The phrase in there that caught my attention the most, that reminded me when Vern said the word purpose, was do not conform any longer to the pattern of the world. Because when I think about the world and I think about the things that I'm drawn to in my worldly nature, the world is not God first. It's not God focused. It's not other second. It really is self-focused. And I think God, you know, the Bible says that God has imprinted himself on us when we were born and when we were made. And I think the world is kind of reprinted over that in a cheap way that sometimes we can get distracted by. I'm talking about me. I don't know if that's true for any of you, but we could be really self-focused because of the culture we live in and the motivations in our heart and the way we spend our time and the things we want to do. That's one of the biggest challenges in Summer's Best 2 Weeks is, you know, the counselors learn it right away. They don't have the choice to be self-focused because they're caring for campers the whole time, right, junior counselors? It is just tremendous in the way to see these high school and college students care for these campers. But it's easy to be self-focused and not other-focused. So what I want to propose for us today is that if we want to do this I'm third thing in our life, we need to do something on purpose. And I think sometimes we get the idea of putting God first. Like, we understand that that's a relationship that we need to feed, and the way that we read the Bible and pray and try to incorporate that in the way that we live. But I want to focus today on the other's second piece. I want us to maybe consider adopting an other's second purpose in our lives. And maybe to understand that, I want to share a few quick stories with you. So I live with four other Christian guys up in Rochester. I live up there because we all split the rent, and it's good. You know, broke college students still now want to eat food. Yeah, I'm removed from that. But I want to tell you about one of my housemates, Joe. Joe made a decision many years ago that he shared with me why, and I kind of asked him about it because I love working with kids. I love doing youth ministry. So Joe volunteered to help out with the children's ministry at the church that he and I first met at, that he's still a part of. And Joe still does that. And Joe's a computer engineer. He's a programmer, the zeros and the ones, and making things happen. And he works at Paychex, and he's a very serious guy. You know, I got to kind of push him out of his shell every once in a while. Joe's a great guy, a lot of integrity. But I asked him, so, hey, Joe, why did you work with the children's ministry? And the day I asked him, he was kind of having a rougher day, and he was kind of rubbing the top of his head, and his hair starting to go away right here. I don't know if that was before or after working with children's ministry. But I asked him, I was like, so why did you choose to do that? Because I was really curious. Everything about Joe made me think that he wasn't somebody that necessarily considered doing it. And Joe, he said to me, I was like, Joe, do you like kids? And he's like, no, not particularly. And me as a youth director who's chosen to do this as my career, and I've been doing youth ministry for like 15 years, I'm like, what is going on, Joe? Like, why would you choose to do that? And his answer blew me away. He said, you know, I didn't want to do it, and that's part of the reason why I needed to. He's like, I knew it would be good for me to go and do that, and it would get me doing something I'd never done. And, you know, part of me was thinking, that choice will make Joe a better father years down the road. I don't know when that's going to happen for Joe, but, you know, that's pretty cool. And I have so much respect for my friend and my housemate, you know, in that regard. When we did the applications for Summer's Best 2 weeks, we had the junior and senior counselors fill out the paper application, and I re-asked this question in person for their interview, whether it was on the phone or in person. And, you know, the question was, why do you want to work at Summer's Best 2 weeks? And many of them, I was surprised how many were like, I want to do it because it will push me out of my comfort zone. It'll be doing something that I've never done before. And the responsibility and the working with kids and the leading the Bible studies and all that shows a lot of maturity for our junior and senior counselors to say something like that. A lot of awareness for themselves. I love working with youth because they'll just surprise you. They're capable of a lot more than maybe we as adults think that they are. And that's really cool. But just saying, I want to get to a comfort zone. I think as adults, I'm going to roll myself in the adult category right now. You could tell me if I fit in there or not, being just turned 33. But I think as adults, sometimes it's hard to want to get ourselves out of our comfort zone because we like where we want to be and we've kind of figured it out the longer that we've been in life. And I think we can learn something from them. I think I can learn something from them, and I do every day. And my housemate, Joe. For me, I went into youth ministry as a career because I felt, I was a youth leader in college doing Summer's Best 2 weeks for 7 years. And during the school year, I was working with Young Life, which I later went on staff with. But when I got to the point where I finished college and I'm doing disaster relief in the Gulf Coast just after Katrina, I was down there for the year anniversary of Katrina, fixing up houses, helping people with AmeriCorps. And, I'd gone through that experience. I'm trying to figure out what am I going to do next? Because I knew AmeriCorps was only going to last so long. And, you know, I thought back to working in Young Life and Summer's Best 2 weeks. Very selfishly, I think, like, I felt the most joy, and I just felt like the closest to God in the times that I was working with kids there. And when I was in the Gulf Coast, there were no kids because they had closed down the schools when everything happened. Eventually, they came back, but they sent them away. There were, like, no kids there. So it was just hanging out with all the young adults and then just contractors and government officials and adult people who'd stayed in the area. And I was completely removed from all the ministries that I had been involved in. And one day I saw a pastor's kid who was there helping out to do some rebuilding stuff, and he's along for the ride because he's a pastor's kid. No choice, you're going. And I got to hang out with him and throw a frisbee with him, and you know, just interacting with that kid really made me think. So I'm sitting on the beach in the Gulf Coast, and you can't go in the water because there's all chemicals and car parts and like everything you could think of from that disaster floating in the water. So I'm sitting on the beach thinking about, where am I going to go next? And for me, it was easy. Hanging out with that one kid, I felt like it brought back all the emotions of the kids that I worked with in college, the kids that I worked with at Summer's Best 2 Weeks, and I felt like my purpose in life was the most fulfilled when I was there, and it was the closest in line with God's purpose for my life. You know, that other second purpose that I'm talking about, I didn't know that phrase, but, you know, I felt it then. So that's what I did, because when I was doing youth ministry, I chose to do it as a career because that's where I felt closest to God, that's where I grew the most, and it's where I could see God working in other people's lives that inspired me and encouraged me in my own walk with Christ, which is a hard thing. So I want us to think about that. You know, we kind of get to see some of that investment in the ways that we serve. You know, some of you are doing the other second purpose in our life. Being a parent is an act of doing that on a daily basis. You can't even think of your own needs. You know, how much silence do you get just being there? I know some of our families that work in the youth, they got 1, 2, 3, 4 kids. They're high energy kids, you know. But in the youth group with middle school and high school base, we've got all kinds of leaders. We've got single moms. We've got empty nesters that are parents of college kids, you know, and their high school parenting days are done. We got parents of current middle school and high school students. You got single unmarried people like me and some others. But all of them, they're busy people. Some of the moms that help out with the youth group, they are in charge of running the schedule of their family and everything going on. You know, and the dads that do that, they're taking time away from their family. But here's why I think they do. One is they get this other second purpose in their life. Not that youth ministry is the only place you can serve. Because the great thing about being part of a church is there's tons of places to go. You can't be like, okay, I love that other second idea, you know, that purpose in my life. But, you know, Sean, there really aren't any opportunities. The thing about being about a great church like this is there's opportunities all over the place. And one of them is youth. But you know what I've seen is that those parents that work there, they've grown closer in their relationships with their middle school and high school kids as they've come along and given up that time to be a part of the youth ministry stuff. You know, our youth ministry has grown so much over the past, you know, year and 8 months since I've been here. And, you know, it's not just me. I credit to a lot of the leaders that we've had on board. But to keep up with the growth, we probably need about 3 times as many leaders as we think of, you know. And maybe that's an opportunity for you to come on board. A couple people came out to me last service, and I was like, look, age is not a factor. I have been in the trenches doing youth ministry with 65-year-old men and women who've been the best leader in the group because of their life experience, and they know exactly what the kids are going through, and like they've seen it in their kids and their grandkids. They've got life experience that 33-year-old Sean just doesn't have. So don't let age be a disqualifier for your other second purpose in life or the busyness too. I mean, really, we want you to come and be a part of the youth ministry so that we can be more effective. But also, what I really want it for and for the leaders who are there right now is because it's a great way for their purpose in life to get close to God's purpose in life. It's not the only way. You know, there's children's ministry, there's the prayer team, there's being a small group leader. There's so many great opportunities here, but it's a great opportunity to maybe consider. As you think about that for your life, let me close with this. I want to read something for you. The founder, Jim Welch, of Summer's Best 2 Weeks, he's got an I'm Third card posted in his office, and the front of it simply says, I'm Third. And on the back of it, it reads this story. A boy left home for college. His parents felt the pride and interest with parents always feel when a son or daughter goes away to college. He was fortunate to have a fine Christian father and mother who believed in him. A few days after he arrived in school, a small frame motto appeared above his desk with these words on it, I'm Third. Everyone coming into his room was attracted by the uniqueness of the motto, and many asked what it meant. He would always reply, I'll tell you, at the meaning of the I'm Third motto at the end of the year. Time went on. he kept his Christian life foremost and his morals pure. Although he was never a star or a headliner in studies or athletics, he did well in school, made it his athletic teams, and took a place of responsibility. At the end of the year, as it approached, he agreed to talk with the guys about the meaning of I'm third. When I was leaving for home for college, he said, my parents told me that they were anxious for me to do well in school, that I should make athletic teams, that I would be well-liked. But there were some things they didn't want me to sacrifice for these. They were very anxious that I would remember to keep God first in my life, others second, and this motto means I'm third. And guys, this is how I've tried to live. There was a silence among those present, and then they too understood why they liked being around this guy so much. He had a purpose in his life. He'd always had time to help, always had time to be a friend. Many had come to know Jesus Christ because of the way he lived. God first, others second, and himself third. I don't know about you, but as I read that, it kind of stirs up thoughts about my own life. And I don't speak to you today as somebody who's got it all figured out. I've been unpacking this for 12 years, and I'm going to continue to unpack it. But I want that phrase at the end to be said of me, not for my recognition, but for God's recognition. What a great legacy. It says, many have come to know Jesus Christ because of all he lived, the way he lived, the way that I live, the way that we live. That's my prayer for all of us.
Thank you for joining us on the Northgate Podcast. We hope this message has been a blessing to you as you walk and grow in your relationship with Jesus Christ. For other great resources, explore our website at northgatefmc.com and come back next week for another great message. Have a wonderful week.